wonderful, wonderful Thursday to you. And thank you so much for tuning into WFSU-FM for Perspectives, which is the name of the program that we're going to be involved in for the next, about 54 minutes or so. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in. And you are also invited to call in, of course, at 414-1234, the Tallahassee number, if it's long distance. And in today's cybernetically connected universe, why, you could be in Australia or Sri Lanka. Who knows? It's 1-800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. And you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. Well, from a derailed Leon County Commission bid in 1986, due in large part to a horribly botched election that cycle, Ion Sancho's gone on to become really an internationally known cheerleader for more voter access and participation. And his involvement in the Florida presidential election back in 2000 propelled him to a role in the HBO movie Recount. And he took on what was then the nation's chief supplier of voting machines, which he proved had a fatal security flaw. And we're going to be, over the course of the next hour, talking about many more of his exploits and accomplishments. And we welcome to Perspectives Leon County Election Supervisor Ion Sancho. It is so good to see you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I want to begin by saying I want to thank the citizens of Leon County for allowing me the privilege and the honor to serve them these last 28 years. It is, it's been the most fulfilling and gratifying work I have ever done, and I could not foresee 28 years ago this journey. But it's been something that I will never, never forget, and the honor of serving citizens is something that I'm sorry, I don't think I can ever surpass that.
Well, in discussions that we've had, Ion, even before we started planning this particular show, the question came up, was there even a moment or two that you thought, maybe one more, just one more?
The amount of energy, the amount of time that this office entails is such that I'm 65 right now. I don't think I can maintain this pace until age 70. And quite frankly, I think it's time for me to let someone with more energy continue what we've established here in Leon County. But I want to jump back briefly, because I would have been a history teacher if I had not jumped into this arena, because history is, as my father taught me, what we were, who we are, and who we will become. Without our history, we are nothing. And I think a lot of people don't remember what happened. And I want to briefly go over why I ran. Because in 1980, at about 11:30 on qualifying week, by the way, which is next week, at noon, it starts at noon. So at 11:30 approximately in the year 1980, before the opening of qualifying week, the Supervisor of Elections, Wilma Sullivan, announced she would not be seeking another term as Supervisor of Elections. And her son, John Sullivan, qualified for the office within that 30-minute period and was the only individual that qualified for the office. That caused a community uproar. Wilma Sullivan had been a good Supervisor of Elections. I had was a voter registrar under her. I had registered voters starting in 1979, hundreds of them. So I worked with the office. But when Wilma resigned without public notice and her son was the only candidate to qualify for the ballot, that did not sit well with the citizens of Leon County. And the laws were different then. You had a week later to qualify as a write-in candidate. Today, the periods are the same. But then 9 individuals signed up to run as a write-in candidate against John Sullivan. And they did not win because 10 candidates, plurality wins in a general election. Johnny Sullivan won with a minority of the votes. He did not get 50% of the votes, but that was sort of irrelevant. He won. And 4 years later, the community threw him out of office. That's how long this memory lasted in the citizenry. And in 1984, the chief individual who had been pounding on Johnny Sullivan for those 4 years was elected. Jan Petrick.
Jan Petrick, yes.
And he was elected. And Jan Petrick had absolutely no background in elections at all.
A little full disclosure, I worked with Jan Petrick. He was a radio time salesman at the same radio station that I worked at back in the day. Very affable guy, very nice, halfway decent time salesman, pretty rotten supervisor of elections.
Well, and I think we have a basis for saying that because in the first major election that Mr. Petrick conducted, it was awful. A large number of polling places never opened on election day. The voting machines were misprogrammed, and individuals who were trying to vote on the lever voting machines that we had employed in 1980 were so frustrated that they broke off the little metal pointers that you pulled to indicate your choice. 5,000 people were turned away from the polls, according to Kerr and Downs, a survey that they did after the election. It was the worst countywide election in the history of the state of Florida. I was a candidate for County Commission 5, a single-member district. I remember my wife coming home to me after trying to vote in tears, saying she did not think that she successfully voted for me. Because not only were the machines in some precincts not programmed right so you couldn't pull the levers, but because of the lateness of the preparation of the voting machines, the levers weren't even aligned with the names. You had to count. For example, my name was the 42nd name on the ballot. Individuals had to count over 42 levers to find the right lever because the levers did not match up with the name. So it was a complete disaster. I was in the supervisor of elections office by 8 o'clock in the morning complaining about it. I saw Marianne Hammer complaining about it. And you talk about a patriot you don't want to anger. It's Marianne Hammer. She was denied her right to vote, and she was not happy about it. And no one was. The upshot of that was, after a legal suit that was a failure – because Judge Hall told me, there's no precedent, Mr. Sancho, for rerunning an election. You have to show me a precedent. And finally, at the end of the trial, he said, your remedy is political, not legal. And I knew exactly what Judge Hall meant. And I'm the kind of person, if there's a problem, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and go right after it. But the way I did that, I think, was significant. Because what I did was I recognized that we had misprogrammed voting machines and that voting was a highly technical operation even in 1980. I flew at my own expense to Jamestown, New York, and became a factory-trained voting machine technician, certified by the Jamestown company who manufactured the device. Then and only then did I run for the supervisor of office based upon the fact that I could properly ensure myself that those voting machines would be properly programmed and we would not ever have this kind of problem again. And I won that race in November of 1988, and we have not had those technical issues. And I will tell you that elections have become far more technical today. In 1988, there was the barest use of computers in our agency. Today, everything is based upon computers and electronics. We can't even hire individuals into our office unless they are computer savvy. And the technical side of this operation has grown exponentially. And so I would ask citizens to remember, when you replace me, you should do it with someone that does have the expertise to make sure that your votes count. It's sort of like you've got a symphony orchestra going on here. You've got 1,000 moving parts that you must coordinate. And if you can't read sheet music, you're not going to be a very good conductor.
Well, you have probably attracted a little bit of raised eyebrows in the fact that you have endorsed your kind of second in command for many of the years that you've been doing this, Ion, which is Mark Early. He has a lot of technical expertise of the kind that you're talking about right now. Is that the main reason you've thrown your support behind him?
Yes. you must know exactly how the operation of this technology operates. It's not a guess kind of world that we live in today. And so many potential problems. For example, in Broward County, in a gambling amendment, one individual, a technical individual, flipped the switch the wrong way. And when the machine, the high-speed absentee ballot counter, got up to 38,000 votes, it started subtracting every additional vote away from the total. So it went up to 38,000 and then started subtracting all the votes. They did not discover that. I will tell you that we have a real interesting dilemma in Florida. If there's a problem with the technology and it's not fraud, the numbers stand under Florida law. Let me repeat that. If there is a voting machine problem and it reports the wrong numbers, and that number is reported to the state, you cannot change those numbers unless you can prove that fraud occurred. And this is not a real good way to run elections. I would say it's the biggest problem that I have with the state of Florida and its elections administration is we do not scientifically validate that the machine totals are scientifically correct. By the way, Leon County and five other counties do. We have purchased audit technology. We changed the law a few years ago to allow us to use an automated audit process. And as of the last election, Leon County retabulates every voter's vote in every race so that we can guarantee that those votes are proper. And that kind of technological expertise, in my opinion, should be applied to every jurisdiction in the country. If you're using a paper ballot to vote on, one needs to confirm through scientific methods that, in fact, those votes are correct. We have paper ballots in the state of Florida. I fought for that battle and we won in 2007. Now that we have the right medium to confirm the validity, we need to go the final step and do the kind of count that would give citizens verification. For example, we can actually give a CD of every citizen all of the votes and they can do a recount in any race they want. That's how good this system is. You don't have to depend on us. You can check it yourself.
Ion Sancho, the outgoing election supervisor for Leon County, our guest on Perspectives today. 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809 if it's long distance, and perspectives@wfsu.org, the email. We shall be right back. Sancho, election supervisor for Leon County since 1989, took the job under, should we say, less than ideal circumstances. Some things needed to be corrected in the local electoral system. And we haven't had any major glitches since you took over this position that I can recall.
Well, we did have one problem in 1992 when we had borrowed from the clerk of the court an envelope machine and it cut too deeply into the absentee ballots, and we had to reduplicate 11,000 absentee ballots so they would run through the machine. So it didn't affect the totals, and the numbers came out fine and all of that. But that's an example of something that you wouldn't think of. You know, if you have an automatic envelope machine, it cannot touch that ballot because if it cuts that ballot, then the machine can't read the ballot. So this is a normal process that the canvassing board has to do every election. We have to reduplicate some ballots. If an individual tears the ballot or otherwise makes the little timing marks around the outside not visible, that ballot then has to be recreated before we can tabulate it because Florida law requires that all ballots have to be put through the machine so we can get that all-important machine number, which of course they believe is always correct.
Okay. You also, and calls are starting to line up here, guys. We'll get right to you, so please hang on. You very famously went after a huge conglomerate, the same folks that have done such a great job with ATMs and other devices, got into the voting machine business, the Diebold Company. You went head-to-head with them over the matter of the integrity of the software that kept tabs on the voting totals, and you discovered a security flaw in that.
Yes. And I was approached by security experts who challenged me to prove to them that the machine totals couldn't be altered to steal an election, to be honest. That's what these individuals challenged me. And that's a pretty important point to know. Can elections be stolen on the equipment? And so I became the first election official in the country to, without the vendors present, do what is called a red attack on our system. Can the system be penetrated to alter the election totals without me knowing it? And so we had several external attacks. And what we found was that as long as this machine was not connected to the internet, external attacks could not, in fact, alter the outcome. However, what we found was that the machine had been preloaded with a mathematical language called AccuBasic Script. And you can manipulate these numbers to actually put false totals on the ballots. That became apparent when Harry Hursty, who essentially is sort of a European equivalent of Bill Gates, made millions and then retired and only does what interests him. This challenge interests him. And without giving him any codes, any books, any instruction on the system, he found a vulnerability that would allow you to put false totals in the system. The system would then read in the morning report, no votes on it, but it would be fully loaded with votes. And as ballots came in, the new numbers would interact with the script and completely change the numbers. The final test that we did to prove this was that we had 8 voters, my staff, and some guests. They voted on 8 ballots and the question was, can the memory card be altered to affect the outcome of an election? My staff voted 6 times, no, it's not possible, and 2 people voted that it was. When we fed the ballots through the machine on the doctored card, what it did flip the election, it went to 6 no, or 6 yes and 2 no. It just flipped it in a way that it's not close enough for a recount. A recount, this would have looked good to the system administrator. And this led to the complete changing of this kind of voting system in the country. I will tell you that then Governor Jeb Bush and Secretary of State Glenda Hood went after me. They tried to remove me from office for discovering this vulnerability. And what saved me was, unbeknownst to myself, the state of California had a technical science advisory committee made up of individuals from Livermore Lab, Caltech, you name it. And it was an independent panel. They took my data and then called me on February 14th, Valentine's Day, and said, sir, we have validated your findings, and not only that, we found 16 other additional security threats. And to change the way that machine could be used, it had to be corrected. All across the country, this device had to be changed. And it was quite a scene, but essentially I was proved correct. Company was eventually forced out of business. And quite frankly, a business that doesn't know what the technology that they're selling employs should be forced out of business. So today, Diebold is no longer in existence, and we do not have Diebold equipment anymore.
Let's go to the phones. George waits on line 1 on Perspectives. Hi, George.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I remember in 2008, one night they had the movie recount at the moon. And I don't know if Mr. Sancho remembers it, but he was one of the people that was there. And he was answering questions. And I remember asking him or thanking him because in the 2004 election, he had a Braille ballot. And I thanked him for that. And he said, you know, we can't do that anymore.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do. After we printed the Braille ballot and Braille sample ballots for the citizens that needed them, and there were a couple of dozen, the state of Florida came back and made it illegal to print a Braille ballot for blind voters.
So how do folks with visual impairments vote today?
They have to use an audio component. They have to listen to the ballot read to them over from the computer. We have a system today, for example, that allows that. It's the same voting machine as all voters use. So we don't have like we started out with two completely different technologies, and hardly anyone ever used the touchscreen DREs. But what we had now is that if you come in, the same voting machine that all others use, a switch is flipped, and now a audio component through a headphone is made available to that voter, and they listen to the ballot and mark the ballot based upon the sound. And as soon as they're done marking it and they touch a switch, that marked ballot is dropped into the same bin with all the other voters' ballots, so it is indistinguishable. But then we've always tried to assist our voters. And when blind voters wanted to use this and there was no law prohibiting it, by gosh, we're going to do it because it allowed individuals to vote independently. And that's the goal of every voter, in my opinion. But again, the state of Florida did not like the fact that we were doing this, and they barred it. And that's not the first time that the Florida legislature acted to bar a kind of innovation that Leon County was doing. They've done it in the past. But I will tell you, I'm glad that I'm an independent constitutional officer because I don't work for the Florida legislature. I don't work for the governor. I work for the citizens that elected me. And I think they want the most accessible, open process possible.
George, we appreciate your call. Let's go to Jack on line two. Hi, Jack. You're with Ion Sancho on Perspectives.
Thank you, Tom. There are many heroes among us, and when it comes to civic engagement and the power of positive voting, I can't imagine a bigger hero than Ion Sancho. This is an unpaid, non-political announcement. he has also, Ion, you have also done a tremendous amount in empowering young people to be voters. And now more than ever, I think the voice of young people in our political process needs to be encouraged. So when you write your book, which I'm sure is coming and I'll be first online for a signed copy, please talk a lot about the importance of youth voting. And would you comment on that for us on this show?
Yes, sir, I will. Because when I became elected in 1988, one of the things that I saw was on that November election, there was a line outside of the FSU facility that they were using to vote then. It's no longer in existence. They tore that down, but it was like not Ruby Diamond, but another gigantic auditorium. And there was a line that wrapped around that building. Citizens did not get voting and quit voting until after 11 p.m. There was a four-hour wait in Leon County. And that's not something you want to do to anyone, particularly young voters. And one of the things that I decided to do was we were ensure that all members of our community, regardless of what age, would have access to this process. And I'm proud that to tell the citizens today that Leon County is one of the nation's leaders in terms of youth vote. In the 2008 election, for example, we had that 18 to 25 demographic equal all other demographic voting groups, whereas the nation's average was about 32% of that age group voting. In Leon County, it was over 50%. And again, it's always sort of been led by my philosophy that guess what, folks? Students are citizens too. These rights and the right to vote apply to citizens. And I don't care where that citizen comes from. That citizen has the right to access that ballot because without that, that's the basis of our civil rights. All other laws stem from the fact that citizens can elect their representatives freely and as they see fit. Without that right, no other right may stand. So citizens, And students, they're the same. And we encourage them. And we will be encouraging them this year as well.
Jack, appreciate your call. That leads to a statement that was made on the floor of the Florida legislature, which you took great pains to remind folks that you do not work for, not too long ago saying that voting really is more of a privilege than a right. In some other parts of the world, people walk for hundreds of miles to go and vote. And if you make it a little bit more difficult and more of a challenge for people, they'll appreciate it more. And that's really the way we should look upon our electoral process.
And I wish those kinds of people would think about their paycheck in that same way. Your paycheck is needed. You need that money to survive on. Just as we need citizens that are well-educated to think about the process and cast their will so that those words on our Constitution, we the people, actually has real meaning and is not some kind of falsehood that we're peddling as snake, you know, oil salesmen. But yes, we have one philosophy in our agency, and that is that this is a sacred right that people sacrifice their lives for. 700,000 Americans were killed in the American Civil War, a nation that was struggling to determine whether it would be one nation with liberty and justice for all. And the side that prevailed is the side that ensures that that is where we are today, and I'm going to work to continue that as long as I can.
Okay. We are back on the phones with Dan. Dan is on line three here on Perspectives. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having Mr. Sancho on. I wanted to just recall for a second that horrific election wherein I was denied the franchise along with so many others, and it pained me so much to see this process so degraded by incompetence. I can recall the state attorney walking across the street in the late afternoon or early evening to ask Circuit Judge J. Lewis Hall to halt the election, which he was unable to do. The headline in the Democrat the next day that was huge that simply said, as I recall, "What a mess!" exclamation point. And the relief that we have had since to have one of the finest supervisors of elections in the state and indeed in the nation. And I just wanted to call and thank Ion Sancho for his leadership and for the fact that my wife and I can proudly go into our precinct and know that just a few minutes later, we will have cast our ballot and it will indeed be counted, because no other amendment in the Constitution ensures, even the First Amendment, our right as citizens like the franchise. And I do regret that Mr. Sancho has gotten to the point where he needs to retire or wants to retire, and I do hope that our elections will continue as flawlessly as they have under his stellar leadership. Thank you.
Very kind of you to say, Dan. I really appreciate that. My question, Ian, is since the beginning of the Republic, voting has been an integral part of the entire governance structure. And it's, although the technical niceties, yes, must be executed with precision and flawlessly and in good faith and all, it's really not that difficult. And you would think after more than 200 years, we'd kind of have this process down as a standard procedure. Why are we changing it all the time?
Well, part of it is that there is no universal central law relative to elections in the United States of America. Unfortunately, the United States joins countries like Libya, North Korea, and others who don't really have any kind of national election law. Every other major Western democracy has centralized election laws. So if you move from London to Edinburgh, the laws are the same. In the United States, if you move from Florida to Georgia, the laws dramatically change. And so it really puts a burden on citizens to know, what is the law? And then when you look at the state of Florida prints no information to the citizens. You get no booklet from the Secretary of State or the Florida legislature telling you what the laws are. And the laws are complicated. For example, in the newspaper this morning, there's a story that a candidate that has filed for the superintendent of schools is going to probably not do that and jump back to the city commission. Well, that means that there's no election on August 30th because there's no contested primary. That means that all the candidates that are left in that race will go to November 8th because there's one Republican, two no party affiliates, and one Democrat. So there's a four-person ballot. Plurality wins on November 8th. But if that person hadn't changed, there'd be an August 30th primary. So the permutations of just one individual making a change can have an impact all through this process. But citizens are not well educated. As I told the U.S. Civil Rights Commission following the 2000 election, the state of Florida at that time spent $35 million telling people how to successfully play the lottery, and they spent no money on how to successfully vote. If you do not provide educational information to citizens, how do they know what the laws are? And so that's why we have really taken great pains to produce a very, what I consider, sophisticated official election guide, which we've been using since 1992. We're proud of it. We received an award in 2012 for having one of the four best election guides in the nation. Two states, San Francisco and Leon County. We were the only county such honored. And in the 2000 election, when the Senate did the diagnostics of that ill-fated election, Leon County had the highest successful voting rate and the highest turnout of any urban county in the state. The Florida Senate also pointed out, we spend more money on voter education than any other county, and those two things go hand in hand. You must give information of a positive nature to citizens, and they will use it.
We also had no butterfly ballots. We did not have to have a cadre of people come in to do an audit of the balloting. We had the optical scan machines, all of that. It was no problem here in Leon County. You're listening to Perspectives. Ion Sancho, the outgoing supervisor of elections for Leon County, our guest. And the calls are still lining up, but there's room for you, too, at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Hey, a reminder that you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. You just go to that address, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and click Perspectives because we archive past shows and try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. And then we keep it on, if not in perpetuity, at least for a heck of a long time. And that's Perspectives online here from WFSU. Back to the phones we go as we continue our conversation with Ion Sancho, and that is John, patiently awaiting on line four. Hi, John.
How are you?
Real good. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just have a phone call, so I'm going to make this quick. I wonder if you could speak to the issue of redistricting and gerrymandering going on only in Florida, but all over the country. How serious a problem do you think this is, and what have you done about it?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we can do about it is to take it out of the hands of the Florida legislature, as they did a wonderful job violating the constitutional amendment called the Fair Districts Act. And I think no matter which party would do it, they would probably do that. Because if you allow a party to redistrict so they can control how their elections turn out, you're asking for trouble. I think nonpartisan or bipartisan election panels would be far better than this kind of an operation. And I will tell you that this is one of those issues where whoever wins the presidency will make a deciding and critical appointment. Because the basic laws right now on gerrymandering and redistricting go back to a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court that said partisan gerrymandering was legal. This was a 5-4 decision just in this past decade. And I will tell you that whoever wins the presidency, that individual will tip this one way or the other. Because in fact, if it goes 5-4 the other way, that partisan gerrymandering is illegal, then in fact, the Supreme Court has essentially put into effect the Fair Districts Amendment that the League of Women Voters had the foresight to put in front of the citizens in the state of Florida. And I do believe that the current process is partisan. The current process around the country really lends itself to citizens' votes not being counted. And for example, look at how the Florida Supreme Court was forced to set up a district that puts me, and I live on the east side of Leon County, I'm voting with Duval County in their congressional district. And you know what? We can do a lot better than ensuring that our votes are scattered across 400 miles. And I think that we can make a difference in this. And I think this presidential election is pivotal to whether or not we can finally end partisan gerrymandering.
How much does this complicate the upcoming election, Ion, to have Tallahassee, which has since time immemorial been represented by one congressional district, now split into two?
Well, we weren't actually in one congressional district for a long time, but we did get into one and we should have stayed in one. But what happened is that there simply was not enough voters in North Florida to redistribute this thing on a better basis. I think that what we'll have to see is, again, will the citizens make a choice based upon these kinds of issues? And that raises an issue. We really need to think more deeply about how we vote. Voting should not be about who you want to have a beer with. You know what? I want the person that I elect as a public official to be competent, to use reason, and to really be what I consider someone that wants the process to work for everyone, regardless of party interests. And today, in my opinion, well, I tell people I love elections and elections have been the greatest thing that I've done in my life. I do not have much affinity for the current political process. I think that our process is despicable by essentially doing something that – well, Lyndon Johnson's predicted this. He said, don't spit into the soup in his earthy way because we all have to drink that soup. And the soup he was talking about was the soup of the Democratic Republic. We have to participate. All of us have to bring in our knowledge, our interests, and who we are into this impressive process. And we have made that soup so toxic with all the garbage we're throwing into it that many Americans don't want to participate in it at all. And that's a huge mistake because those that are really operating this process for their own self-interest really don't want to expand the franchise. They don't want new people. I will tell you that in 1982, I was at a Stetson reception after work because I went to Stetson, by the way, where I conducted the student government elections in 1976. And what we found, what he took me aside at this cocktail reception for Stetson graduates, and he said, Ion, you're never going to have success coming to my committee, because he was the chairman of the Ethics and Elections Committee in the Senate. You're never going to have success coming to us with ways to expand the franchise, because the devil we know is way better than the devil we don't know. And if you get 5 or 10 or 15% more people participating, we might not have our jobs. That's how many legislators see this process. And I'm sorry, that's not my role in life, is to make incumbents easier to win or defeat. I want everybody to participate. Every individual has unique talents that only their life experiences taught them. They shouldn't be denigrated for those experiences. I want them to be praised for their life experiences. And I want them to share the information, the knowledge, and their capacity for doing something positive with everyone else. All of us need to understand that we have an important role in this process, and your right to vote is there because it's important to the rest of us. If you take yourself out of the process, we are now being deprived of your wisdom, your experience, and your talent. I'm sorry, I want more people's experience and talents in this process, not less.
And remember, you get what you vote for, or not. Back to the phones we go. Leah is on line one. Hi, Leah. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Thank you so much. And Mr. Sancho, I've known you for many, many years. And what you just said is incredibly important. I'm a former lobbyist and children's advocate. My question is that I have become disenfranchised. I quit my job, I sold my home in Leon County, and now I'm moving to Colorado. I'm trying to figure out how to change my voting there. I also am concerned about my elderly family members here in Florida and for them to be able to ensure that their vote counts.
Well, I will tell you that one of the things, the only thing I can do effectively is ensure that Leon County works and works as well as it can, because we have 67 supervisor of elections. I am aware of the voting systems and the Secretary of State in Colorado. I attend lots of national conferences. I've spoken at them, and it's an excellent way to pick up additional information. For example, the early voting process that we invented and brought to Florida in 1992, I will tell you with no modesty that I stole from the Texas Republican Party. When I went to a national conference in San Antonio, and the Republican Secretary of State gave a talk about early voting, and I realized this could be the solution to the tremendous problems that we have finding and staffing precincts on election day, which is an impossibility. For example, Miami-Dade has almost 1,000 voting locations. They employ almost 10 to 15,000 people to conduct an election. You can't really force a million people through 1,000 locations in one day without a huge mess. But what we did, borrowing from Texas, was open locations 2 weeks in advance and reduce the number of people incrementally, so that now the way it works in Leon County, those people who vote by mail, who vote early, are 50% of the entire electorate. That means that those people who want to access the now 88 voting locations that we will have open on November 8th and August 30th no longer have to deal with this massive line of people, because 50% of the voters have voted. Colorado, I will tell you, is one of the nation's leaders in voting and voting innovation. Out west, there's a big movement by voting by mail. And that's the number one way that they are moving in Colorado to voting. You can vote in person as well, but they're pushing in that direction. I actually like early voting, in-person voting, because that has the highest level of your vote being counted. And again, early voting and absentee or mail voting really allows us now to accommodate everybody with no major crushes anywhere. So it distributes the load over a 14-day period as to forcing it into a one-day period. And Colorado is not playing political games with that process the way other states are. For example, I'll jump to Ohio and show how laws that on its face may be fair are very unfair. For example, what Ohio has done, and it's a legislature much like Florida, controlled by Republicans with a Republican governor and Republican Secretary of State. What they tried to do was basically say everyone has to have the same days to vote and the same hours. But excuse me, a county that has 12,000 people does not need the same amount of early voting sites as a county with 1 million people. And what they've done is essentially bias the process so that in the urban areas, there's huge lines that will form. Florida did not actually tried to implement that in 2010 after the 2008 election in a partisan move, because 54% of all of the African-American voters that voted in our presidential race in 2008 statewide voted at early voting. In 2010, the Florida legislature dramatically reduced early voting. I told them what would happen. They didn't listen to me. And after the last voter voted at 1 o'clock in the morning in Miami-Dade, and our state was outraged over our inability to process our voters, the Florida legislature was forced to restore early voting hours so that now metropolitan areas can accommodate all of those urban voters. One size does not fit all, and those jurisdictions that try to do that are finding that the U.S. courts are not allowing them to do that. And in Ohio, they've been told this is an unconstitutional act. District courts and an appellate court just ruled that this past week. And this brings back a point, though. I think we need to have a national right to vote. We do not have a right to vote in the United States Constitution. And so this means that the states, depending upon their orientation, may be tyrannical in terms of suppressing votes, or in cases like Colorado, welcoming to voters. So I think, Leah, you're going in the right place in terms of Colorado. At least you're not going to a state that is doing their best to shut down the rights of voters.
Let's go back to the phones as calls are lining up here. How about Claudette on line two, folks? Hi, Claudette. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thanks so much. I am so glad that I tuned in today because I really want to express my appreciation for all you have done, Mr. Sancho. I've been proud to be an elector, a voter in this district. I do have a couple of questions. Number one, it's my understanding that if you are a candidate with no party affiliation, if the League of Women Voters sponsors a debate, you are not invited to participate. Is that correct?
I do not know. I do not. I don't participate in that kind of a process. The only kind of debate process that I actually do participate is the one that WFSU puts on their
bandwagon.
Bandwagon.
Yeah.
I do go to bandwagon. I am not a member of the governing board of the League of Women Voters, so I can't address whether or not that's something I'm unaware of.
But certainly, Claudette, there are a lot of forums that are going to be coming up in various groups, whether it's NEBA or Rotary Clubs or churches have frequent forums. And a little plug here, during the entire month of July, we'll be doing candidate forums here on WFSU's Perspectives. We're going 5 days a week, wall to wall, throughout the entire month until the mail ballots go out. So between the end of qualifying, which is noon, a week from tomorrow, and then we will know exactly who is running for what in Leon County and the 2nd Judicial Circuit and for the state races. We will be getting into those on WFSU and NPA, D's, R's, whatever. We'll take whoever is. Reed, let's see if we can get you in here on Perspectives. Hi, Reed. Reed is gone. Okay, let's go to 6. Gerald, not allowed to vote in 2000. What happened there, Gerald?
Yes, sir. I was a registered voter, moved here in 89, and when I went to vote in 2000, they said that I could not vote because my name had been purged from the voter, records, and I was not notified, and I feel like the Secretary of State and Jeb Bush stole that presidential election because they purged the voting rolls. And I'd like to know how they were allowed to do that.
Again, each state is...
You were registered from then on.
Actually, sir, that's not the law, unfortunately, in Florida. For example, if you don't vote on a regular basis, Florida will put you on a suspended list. And after two general elections, which is 2 years, that's 4 years, if you haven't voted, you're dropped. Now, I think that's a mistake, but the state is doing that to try to basically save resources. They're saying, well, there's no evidence that the person is there, so why do we need to send him anything? But I agree with you. I think we need a federal law that says if you're registered to vote, unless you move to another jurisdiction or are convicted and lose your rights in some manner, you should remain a voter, because your right to vote should be your choice, not up to the whether or not the state wants to efficiently maintain its rolls. Oh, they haven't voted in 6 years. Let's get rid of them. No. And in fact, there's a legal battle going on right now back in Ohio where they're attempting to do this, and I think they're going to lose again. But so people need to know that if you registered a long time ago and this election is motivating you to vote, you need to call our office and make sure you can vote. Make sure you're registered. Voter registration closed down 29 days before every election. 29 days. That means that if you don't know You haven't voted in a while, and I will tell you, I've had a lot of voters that tell me I haven't voted for, you know, decades, but this election is motivating me, and I am going to vote. Call our office at 606-8683, or one can go to the website at leonvotes.org. We actually have ability right there for you to enter in your data and you can check on yourself. And that's going to be important for address changes and name changes. We need to have the most accurate information on you. Citizens often forget to notify us when they move from one side of the county to the other side of the county or to another county. You need to make sure we have that current address, and then you'll be fine forever.
This has been an absolute delight, and I am so honored that you came on with us for the entire hour, Ion. We know that it's going to be yet two more flawless elections coming up, the primary in August and then the general election in November. And then we can't wait for you to write that book.
Thank you very much. Again, it's been an honor and a pleasure. And America and Tallahassee, remember, we need you. Your vote counts here.
Ion Sancho, Supervisor of Elections for Leon County. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls handling the technical side of things today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Taking off next week, attend to some family matters. Regan McCarthy will be with you, speaking with Tallahassee City Manager Rick Fernandez. All happening next week on Perspectives.
Available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.